1979, talking to Goodwin Simakin in Caltech for the biography series.
It would be much easier if you ask her questions, you know, because I tried it before and I couldn't remember all the things of the teacher. I couldn't ask her some questions, and that won't run really well, you know. Because I didn't know where to start from.
Yeah, but what she's just going to ask questions. So.
So maybe we could start with when you were born and where.
Well, I'm 54 years old now, and I was born here at Caltech. And
what date was that?
At December 22nd, 1923. And it was just about the year when they moved from down here at the old village, they call old village down here, 3 miles down here. And just, but by that time, they moved up here from down there. The reason, the purpose of it was moving from down there because they had the store here and they did not know a grocery store down at 3 Mile.
So
it was an Adolf, and not Adolf Miller, I remember the time when Adolf Miller had it. But this store was belongs to somebody you call what was his name now? Anyhow, there was a guy buried up here by the old church up in front. You used to call him Addo. Addo was his. That's the only name I know by him. You know, he used to own the store, and then another guy came, was carrying mail up and down the Yukon. They used to have mail run on the Yukon that time by dog team. And then he bought that store. And at the same time, there was mail coming from the coast to this portage. That was the main line for a mail service to go into Fairbanks and Anchorage in those days. And, you know, because there was no airplanes or there was no big boats at that time. So most of the time, the people just packed, during the summer, they packed the mail. But they were allowed only 75 pounds. And there's about 6 creeks, I guess, coming down, just about as big as this Caltech River. Some of them is much bigger than that, or towards Unalakleet. But they had bridges, foot bridges, in all those creeks, you know, to go across for the summertime and like early in the fall when they're carrying mail with dog team, and late in the spring when there's hardly no more snow on the ground, you know, they use those bridges for walking. So therefore just call it a footbridge, you know.
How far was that walk?
It's a 90 miles from here to Unalakleet. And the path was really, really good. Now it's grown in, you know, ever since they quit doing that. And then they had the cabins in between. They used to call mail cabins. Okay, they had one at 22 mile and one at 40 mile, what is called 10 mile. And then there's another one at 50 mile and one about 23 miles from Unalakleet. They had mail cabins, and all those mail cabins, they had a telephone. You know, they had a telephone. They didn't have no satellite phone like we got now. You know, it was just a telegraph wire running from St. Michael all the way up to, all the way to Tanana. And you could talk that far on that telegraph wire. But they had to maintain it mostly. About twice a year, they had to maintain it in order to keep it in service. And
well, how often do people walk that trail?
Used to go twice a month, I think.
How many people would do it? They had certain mail carriers?
They had certain mail. Well, there was one white guy here, the guy in Nolada, John Summers, I guess you heard about him. He had the mail contract. But he was stationed here. This is about where I got my house. My house is right over here, this one. You could just see it. There was a mail cabin right there. and he was living there. And he was stationed here, and from here he was hiring some of the natives, you know, to go packing or haul mail for them. And those days, there used to be a lot of mail, but only summertime, you just carry only first-class mail. But just about ended the season when the fur, after they buy the fur, you know, in April or May, oh, you used to carry hundreds of pounds of mail by dog team, you know, because I was a little boy when I used to go with my dad. My dad was one of them. My dad was one of the mail carrier, but he only carried mail from Nolado to 40 miles out from here. And then his dogs were too rough, you know, at the beginning of the season, like in the fall time. So he take me out of the school. He take me out of the school to hold the break for him. You know, they had to use a what they call G-pool. You know, they had to be on the bow of the sleigh with skis. That's the only way they could keep the sleigh on the trail, because the load is so heavy. You know, they must have about 800 or 900 pounds of mail put in there every trip, you know. So, and they couldn't handle that from the handlebar. You know what I mean by handlebar? Yeah. They couldn't handle that from the handlebar, so they had to stay on the G-pool to keep that sleigh on the trail. Whenever there was any rabbits or ptarmigans on the road, you know, he have a tough time holding the dogs back. In fact, I'll tell you one story about my dad. I went with my dad out there, and just it was in December, and I was only a little boy. I must have been about 6 or 7 years old. And then I went out to 10 mile with him. Coming back, we had only about 10 pounds of mail, and we had 13 dogs. And my brother was trapping out there at 10 mile. That's 40 miles from here. And he left that morning ahead of us. And, well, there's only 10 pounds of mail and 13 dogs, and that's quite, I mean, that's too many for that 13 dogs, you know. So my dad told me to stand on the handlebar, and he was going to stand on the G-pool, you know. We got out there, we couldn't stop to eat, because the dogs were smelling the fresh trail ahead of us, you know, and you know there's a dog team ahead of us. And every once in a while we had one dog in the team that was pretty rough. He'd bark once in a while, you know, and jolly up the dogs and galloping and running. Just when we were at 10 mile, my dad told me to hold the brake, because we didn't use the bridge that time. You know, there was some snow on the ground then, and the creek has frozen over. But the creek was pretty deep, you know. It was pretty deep, so he told me to hold the brake so he'll get off the G-pool, and then he'll put the skis in the sled. So by the time he took off the skis and put it in the sled, then this dog started barking. He held that brake, and he couldn't hold. He had a brake about 8 inches wide and 4 inches deep. He couldn't hold those dogs with that brake. 4 miles he was holding that brake, and I was running behind him with these two pair of skis. And I was just only a little boy, and I was scared, you know, and I started crying. I never stopped running, too, for that 4 miles. I ran all the way after him for 4 miles, and there you little there was another little bridge out here, but he didn't use that bridge, you know, at 6 miles from here. And it was kind of steep, that one, a little bit steeper. Finally, he just kind of put his sled off the trail and hit the bank with that sled, you know. And then that stopped the dogs there. And he was waiting for me. He ran out to his leader, and then he took his axe. He took his axe and tried to hold the dogs back, you know. And he did. He just hold the dogs right there, you know, while before I got to him. And I see where he was trying to, you know, he was playing cowboy, I guess, trying to, you know, they have a long snubbing line, too, they call a snubbing line, to tie the sleigh with. And it hooks on right onto the wheel dog, I mean, behind the wheel dog. You know, and every little stump you go by the trail, He threw that thing around that step, that rope. He just dragged him out, pulled him out. I seen it while I was running, you know. I finally caught up with him. And he said, "Okay, my son, get in the sleigh. We're going to make these dogs go from here next 6 miles." I said, "Okay." I sat down in the sleigh and he got little willows, you know, enough to scare those dogs with. I got in the sleigh and then we left. Boy, you make those dogs gallop all the way from that 6 mile, from 6 mile out here. You make those dogs gallop all the way in. he was mad too. And anyhow, he was when we got here, you know, he said, "Gee, those dogs are pretty rough." Well, he went to Nevada the next day and then came back, and he had about 300 or 400 pounds to bring back then. You know, but he said, "Well, you don't have to go with me, so I went back to school." Well, that way I didn't have very much of schooling, because I had this 6 other brothers, all right, but they were out trapping, you know.
Are they all older than you?
Yeah, they were all out, and then he did not have no choice. I was only the boy, the next oldest one, so I had to go with him. So therefore, I just went to school only out of 9 months of school. We used to go only about 4 months. That's all I used to go in school, and I went only first, fourth grade. In school. But in those days you could go up to sixth grade and then you're done with the school. You know. Because there was no other high school that you could go to. Well, there was Mount Edgecombe School wasn't open yet at that time. So later on it started to get a little bit better, you know, after I quit school. Well, after you're 16. After you're 16 and then you're done with the school too. And so when I went to school here, there was only sometimes there was only about 4 students from September. Well, all the parents would go out in September and they'd stay out till December. And then they'd come back and by January, we're all out again. We're all out in our camps again. Well, in those days, you had to stay out and live off the country, you know, because there was no meal plan like we're getting some fresh food right now, eggs and all those things. Only time we get our fresh food is in the beginning of the spring in June, and then the last boat in September. Just twice a year, that's all we used to get, some eggs or some fresh food. All the rest of the time, we just had to live off the. We want to get something fresh, then we had to go out and kill it. You know.
But the riverboats that brought the food
in? The riverboats was only the one that was bringing a mail and the groceries twice a year.
Where did they come from?
They come from Yanana.
I suppose those things were probably expensive too, man.
No, they were really cheap at that time. Oh, they were really cheap at that time. You can go to the store with $50 and you got enough groceries to last you for 2 months. And now you go to the store with the $50 bill, you get a little box and maybe about that high, you know. And you don't even get enough for 1 meal, you know. And my family had 6 boys and three girls, and when I was growing up, and we had one pretty good sized building, and all of us had to stay in there. And I remember my dad used to get 50 pounds of flour put in there about twice a week, you know, and all that was only the sweetest thing we can get, you know, like sugar and flour. And my brother used to bake bread, and boy, that bread was just only a last 1 day. You know, you bake 8 loaves of bread, and then it would just only last about a day. And then the next day, he had to go bake some more, and the rest of the time, if he's out trapping, or my mother had to do the rest, you know. And my parents were really busy. My mother was out every day tried to cut something for us. You know, he'd go out snaring rabbits or ptarmigans on fishnet while my dad was carrying the mail, or if my dad was trapping, then he'd been out trap line for 30 days sometimes. And in during that time, you know, we had no extra dogs, and we had to haul wood by our neck or pack it out. You know, but the wood was really close at that time. Right now, you had to go quite a ways back to get the wood because they're all chopped out now. Well, we don't stay long enough to get our supply of wood for the winter, you know, and here, like the way the people is doing right now. You know, it's different. Oh, much way different right now. You can go out and get a load of wood, you know, with a kicker boat, and you got enough wood there for a couple of weeks. In those days, there was no hardly any boats. Maybe 10 out of 5 would have had a boat. 10 families out of 5 would have had a boat, you know. And when I was a kid, there was only 3 inboard motors in town.
And did people all get to use those, or did they belong to certain people?
They just belonged to certain people, but they, like if they want to go up the river, then they had to hire the boat, you know, to bring their winter supply for trapping. Like if we're going down the river, well, it's easy, you go with the current. You know, sometimes we just use our fish wheel we use for summertime, and we just make raft and then put platform on there and put all our winter groceries plus our dogs and our winter gear, you know, on there and then move down. Well, ever since I was a kid, my parents were down 22 miles below here. And then we had a summer camp on the hillside, and then across the river, the Cayuse Loop come out right 22 miles at the same place. So whenever we're done with the summer fishing, come up for a little while, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, go back down again in September and stay there till December. We come for Christmas. And, you know, in those days, they were really religious in those days. I mean, they were pretty strong in Catholic religious. We were all Catholic in this village, you know. And my father would walk a mile just to go to church, you know. He'd have to go to Nulada, even though there was a foot of loose snow or 2 foot of loose snow. He'd have to go to Nulada just to go to midnight mass. And so we started from the camp about the 22nd. My birthday, we used to take off all the time down at the camp. And then we had very little amount of dogs. You know, so I had only about 9 dogs and to carry about 6 little ones in the sled, plus my mother, you know. So we start out early in the morning, about 5 o'clock. We used a Coleman lamp, and then we start in snowshoeing. Just about by that time, sometimes 13 or 14 hours, it had to snowshoe all day long. I would stop to eat, all right. But it just takes about that long to come from 22 miles. Now I go down there in my 17, 35 minutes and come back in 40 minutes. I always think about it every time I go down. When I was a little boy, I used to be on this trail all day. I was thinking, you know, and here I just go by there in 35 minutes and to go down and 40 minutes to come back.
Well, what was it like when you went to Nulada? What would go on there?
Well, you'd have the midnight mass at Nulada, you know. And then they had several nuns there, and we had no priest. If we had a priest here, we had a Catholic priest here, we would never go to Nulada just for that midnight mass, you know. But there was no priest here, so we had no choice. We had to go to Nulada just to go to midnight mass on Christmas night. Sometimes we'd stay there for about a week, though, till New Year, you know, and then we'd come back down.
What was New Year's like, you know, like for different New Year's, what kind of celebrations would people have?
Okay, there's a good question there. At New Year's time, we celebrate are catching for the fall, you know, if we had a good season. And then we started celebrating it together, like a lot of people are down here. If we're down here, we put up a washtub dance, what you call washtub dance. Well, the Eskimo call it the Eskimo dance. Have you seen Eskimo dances before? Yeah, it's the same assembled to that. You know, then first around 7 o'clock, I guess, we start out singing with some drums. In the evening time, and then we let all the women go out, and then they come back, and then they start in dancing while the men were singing. You know, they bring some food. Well, we're doing that. That's an old custom. They're doing that so they'll have better luck again for the past year. You know, so they'll have a good season, like a lot of fish or some more fur to live on off the country. And then after that, after the women come back, and then the men goes out, and then we come back with some food and put them all in one pile in the community hall. This is all done in community hall. And then we dance to that, and then after we dance to it, and then we just disturb it around to the people that's in the hall. And it's just a custom that we were doing. Well, Eskimos used to do the same thing too. They had their own custom of doing those things. And I remember my dad was telling me about, but they were really strict with their custom in those days. He said, you know, if they go into the community hall, like up there, nobody lives there till they get through, regardless if it was 2 or 3 days, you know. Everybody stays right in there. Well, they bring enough food for that amount of time. And they hang up some bladders, you know, like the whale bladders or seal bladders or walrus bladders or fish bladders, whatever they got. That was their custom. They dry them up and then they blew it up like a balloon, and then they just hang it up in the community hall. And I don't know what they do. I don't know what else they do to them. But anyhow, they said nobody leave the community hall till they're completely done. So therefore, they take their honey buckets along with them, you know, and stay right in there and eat right in there.
They sleep right in there too.
Pardon?
They sleep right in there too.
They sleep right in there for 2 or 3 days, whatever amount of time they're. Or they take their sleeping bag. Well, of course, if there's enough people, you know, in the hall, then it the body would keep it warm, you know. So they just stay right in there.
Well, how would people collect food for that time?
They start in like the beginning of the fall. Now, right now, if we go out now, we start in hunting as soon as we get to our camps. You know, before the bear get into their dens or the moose go to a different place. Well, there wasn't very much moose when I started growing up. When I was about 15 years old, I think I was the first moose I seen. And every time there was a moose track, there was I never seen a caribou yet, but my dad said there was lots of caribous around here. They used to migrate through here somewhere, like down around 22 mile where my camp was. Those was used to migrate over at Anoka River. And they only have one pass, you know, to go over to the hillside when the snow get deep. And out there on the big hills, you know, the snow is not very deep all winter long because it blows off, you know. And they cannot get their enough food out there in the flat because there's too much snow fall on it. Therefore, they migrate across the river and then get into the higher hills where they had their food. That's the caribou I'm talking about. But then later on, there started to be a moose. And if there was one moose in the area, and then probably there are some guys 10 miles above us or 20 miles below us or 25 miles below us, my dad would go tell them, you know, You seen a moose track. And then they all gather up and then they go after that moose. And a whole bunch of them go after that. The men go after that moose. And you didn't know how to hunt it, you know. There's just no experience. They thought it was like a caribou. But when I was growing up, my dad used to tell me, in the morning, he used to get out of bed, run around out there in the snow. He said, that's only the way you're going to be good, he said.
Well, mm-hmm.
I used to go run out, you know. We used to go out in a campfire in fall time, and if there was little snow on the ground, then I'd run out there and make fire, you know, cut some wood, and then bring it and make fire, campfire. You know, I said that's only the best exercise you got right now before you take in it, not even water or tea or a piece of bread. You see, it'd be much better if you run for a mile or so every morning, and you'll be a good runner. And you got to depend on that when you go after anything that's like bear or moose, he said. You know, because caribou is easy, he said. There's a bunch of caribou, and he just goes so far and then he stops. You know, he stops and wait for you, he said. But they're really fast. You got to be a real fast runner to get them, he said. But moose, he said, he hear you once or he smell you once, that's it. He wouldn't wait for you. That's where you're going to have a tough time. That's when you need your power to catch that animal. If you don't know how to hunt it, he said, you'll never get a moose. And he was right. Well, I took advantage of what he said as I was grown. Not when I was single, but after I got married, then I started to think about it, you know. Well, anyway, I took little of his, little of what he told me, you know, tried to keep myself in shape. Like he told me to go out in the morning and run around for a while, you know. And I'd do it, you know. I'd run around for a while. And I can tell my kids right now, and they wouldn't believe me. Like I told you, that it's not written down in the book, and they wouldn't believe you. Even these young guys wouldn't believe you that day. How hard you used to work to catch our moose.
Well, you go out and run around in the morning. Are you wearing warm clothes?
Well, usually I just go like this, you know.
Just
put on
light shirt,
or if I got gloves or a hat, that's all I'd put on, and then I'd run around for a while. And as long as I'm running, I'm all right, and I'm warm.
What kind of shoes would you have?
I'd had moccasin moose hide shoes. They call it moccasin, you know, real light. And I used to run quite a bit. I tell some of these boys, there's some guys might would tell you that. I used to run from here down to 22 mile, never stopped running in snowshoes. You know. I could run all the way down and back, I was telling my kids, you know, and if I was in your age, and I was watching them playing basketball back here, and they'd last only about 10 minutes and they'd be puffing, you know, they're out of wind. Why are you like that? I said, you're supposed to be better than that, because you only take the exercise when you have to. I said, you got to keep it up every day in order to be in a good shape. I know it. I done it for myself, I said, you know. I told him, I done it for myself. I used to run down a moose in my young days, you know. And like I told you, the moose hear you once, he'll never give you a chance. But if you could be a fast or long-winded guy running, you could catch that moose up. In fact, one time I ran after a moose, and well, the snow was pretty deep at that time, about 2 feet of snow, you know. And I was able to stay on top of that snow with snowshoes. And it was just a little bit hard for the moose that he couldn't, far enough for him to stay away from me. I could see that moose through the woods and running, but I didn't have a chance to shoot at it. 2 days I was chasing that moose. I mean, not steady. You know, I knocked off about 9 o'clock at night. Next morning, early in the morning, I went after it again. The next morning, after I left that moose, he don't hear me no more from, you know, behind him. He just dropped. And well, I was tucked out, me too, so I had to go back to the camp and then get a rest. Next morning, I went out with my brother-in-law, Clement. We went out after it again. Then I could see that moose. It's just enough to stay ahead of me. And I sometimes I just see his legs, that's all through the willows, you know, or through the timbers. I never had a chance to shoot at it. Pretty soon that thing is starting spreading blood, you know. He was overworking himself. You know, he just started to cough out blood. Well, even at that, I couldn't catch it. Even at that, he was still better than me. That evening, I quit again, and then my brother-in-law, he's a good runner, Clement is my uncle. He's a really good runner in those days, and he was young. But I was younger than him, and I could go faster than him and longer than him, but he never gave up. He was behind me all the time. But I didn't know it. I thought he left me, you know, because it was pretty late at night, so I just made a shortcut back to the camp. And he was after that moose, and just about 200 feet where I left, he was there. He dropped again. He dropped right in the hole. He said, he was just walking. Pretty soon he seen that moose jump up right in front of him. It was pretty dark then already. He said, and he shot at it a couple of times, and he missed it because it was too dark. The third morning again, we went after it again. Of course, we got on there with the dog team. You know, there was a trail. So from where I left off, we started chasing it again. I seen that moose again that morning just before he started running. There was two of them. I seen it, but I didn't have a chance to shoot at it. You know, so I start running, and then I start running after it. But through the woods, you cannot go very fast with snowshoes. You know, where a moose can go through faster, you know, because he can move around pretty good. But like if there was pretty thick brushes, then you can't go very fast with snowshoes. Well, in a place like this, I seen him, and then he got away from me again. I chased him till that afternoon. And then I was right behind it, and then he just come out. My brother-in-law happened to walk out in the open, and here I was chasing it out to that the same lake, you know. And when I was just about maybe 100 or 200 yards back in the woods, I started hearing shooting out there. He hurt me, so it cut out to that open place, and my brother-in-law just happened to walk out in that same lake, and then he shot that moose. I come out, and there it was, that moose was laying there. Well, he said, I got him. He said, this thing make us really work. He said, well, we didn't have no choice, you know, we had to go kill it, regardless, even though it was how many miles away from the camp, but we had to do it for our family. You know, my brother-in-law had already had 3 kids at that time, and my parents were old, you know, so I had to go out and do something for them. They were not able to go out and get whatever they used to do for us. It was our turn to do something for them then. I don't think my family, I got 6 boys and 5 girls, and I got 11 in my family right now. Of course, they're not all living with me. But now I've been telling my boys all this, and they wouldn't believe me, you know. My youngest boy is going to high school right now. I watch him play basketball every night, and I try to explain to him. I said, I didn't believe my father very much, but I started to think about myself. How am I going to make my living anyway when I have to live off the country? Well, that's the first thing that come to my mind, and then I had one baby of my own, you know. And then I couldn't get nothing fresh for her. There was no fresh food that I could buy for her, no fresh milk I could buy for her. And I want a healthy family. So I just had to go out every day and kill something for her. You know, like the fish or go out and chicken or ptarmigan or rabbits or willow grouse, whatever. Some little animal, you know, to keep my family healthy, you know. And I thought that would be the best thing that I could get for my kids, you know. So I had to go out and kill something fresh every day for them. Well, my mother was the same way. I think when you used to go out every day for us, I told my kids that. Then I started to have dogs. I never had dogs till after I got married. I got married when I was 21 years old. And then, well, nobody wouldn't put me on the stage. He says he's a young guy. He could run. You know, my old man would let me run ahead of dogs if there's no trail. He wouldn't put me on the sleigh. In those days, you know, no young guys ride on the sleigh. Well, he believed in it too, and therefore he just make me run, or any of my brothers were like the same way. You know, they make us run ahead of dogs, or if even the dogs are going fast, they make us run behind the dogs, behind the sled. So I kind of listened to different people on experience about dogs. You know, just how they had some good dogs, and I was thinking to myself, I'm going to have a good dogs when I grow up. You know, if I start to have my own team, my own family, I'm going to have good dogs. Well, after I got married, I bought one dog with a three letter, and I had only one dog, but my brother was using that, you know, and then it had three, so I had six pups and two older dogs. And then my mother-in-law, he lost her husband, you know, and then I was staying with my mother-in-law because he had no place to stay at that time, you know, because he had some boys and girls here too, you know, but as long as I wasn't drinking, then she was all for me, you know. I treated him better than my own mother, and so he stayed with us all the time. And then we had a camp up here at 1 mile. And then every morning before I go check my wheel, after I check my wheel, I take out all the good fish, you know, out of the wheel, and then I cook it for my pups. These six pups I got, I cook it all for my pups, and then after that I eat breakfast, and then I cool it down, and then I feed my pups. Dinner time the same way. If there's some left over of this morning's food, I don't give it to my dogs. I throw it away and put in another fresh pot for them. In the evening, the same way. I do the same thing. I put out another fresh fish for them and cook that for them again. And I just continue that all summer. And the pups were so small, then I started running with them. And I turned their mother loose. I'd run for a mile with them every morning. And sometimes they would be quite a ways behind me, those pups. Pretty soon, in about a month time, those little pups started to keep up with me, you know. They grew a little bit bigger, and then they started to keep up with me. A month later, then I couldn't get away from those dogs. They were behind me, or they were ahead of me all the time, you know. And they were getting good because I gave them exercise. At the same time, I was giving myself an exercise too, you know. So we... Okay.
Okay. So you were talking about when you were training the dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how did that team turn out?
That team turned out real good. Well, I never get through with them yet. That fall, we went out to the camp where I was down there. I told about 22 miles. We went down, and then I had one little girl already at that time. And then I started to fish for them there too. And I started to fish for them there, and then the pups were big enough then. They were 3 months old at that time, and then I couldn't get away from them anymore then, like I told them. So I turned the mother loose, and the mother took care of it from there. He used to go out in the woods and stay out in the woods all day long with I didn't know where he'd been wandering around with those pups. And she started training those pups. She started training her pups, you know. Come back in the evening, and then she all tucked out. You know, I didn't feed them 3 times a day anymore. You know, I'd feed them in the morning and then at night, that's all. So I, then the season, trapping season opened. Well, I had no sled, because that was my first dog team I had, and I didn't know how to make sled. But my dad told me how to make sleigh, you know, but he never did make sleigh for me. And so he told me what kind of birch to get to make sleigh. So I just started to use it, you know, when I have to use it. You know, I had a family, and then I had to do it for myself then. So I used to go out every day and cut birch and bring home a birch. And pretty soon, I just about in October, I guess, I got everything all ready to put together, the sled. Well, November is our trapping season open. You know, and then it closed in end of February or March, end of March. Just the trapping season was closed then. You know, so I went out with my brother-in-laws. I didn't use my dogs because I figured they were too young. Well, they were 4 months old, they were ready to hook up. But I didn't want to lose any one of those dogs, you know, so I just go on foot with them. But they had 9 dogs of their own. But me, I had just those two older dogs and the pups, you know, 6 pups. And you can easily cripple a dog, you know, if you go on a clear ice, because they're scared of ice, on the ice, you know. They're mostly, it's blown down at 22 mile all the time, and just as fast as the snow comes down, it just blows away, you know, and there's nothing but just a clear ice out there, and even a human being could get hurt, you know, on the ice. Therefore, I didn't want to use my pups, so I just went with them on foot, you know, and we used to trap down about 16 miles below 22 miles. And then I'd start out in the morning. Sometimes they never catch me up, you know. As long as there was a little snow on the ground, I don't think anybody would keep up with me anyhow, even with dog team. Because the further I used to run, the more I used to like it. Seems like I'm just pretty light, you know. I could just almost float in the air the way I feel if I started running. And we used to start out in the morning, go down to our 16 mile camp, quite a ways out. They'd never catch me up, even with their 9 dogs, you know. And so, sometimes they offer me a ride if they catch me up. I said, no, I'd rather walk. I'd rather run or walk. And
so how many miles would you walk a day?
As long as there was little snow on the ground, I could run 40 or 50 miles a day. I could run all the way to Nolada at that time, in those days, in my young days. I used to walk up there. In fact, I ran all the way from here to up here to about 18 miles one time. Maybe Mr. Callan, you ask Mr. Callan. Mr. Callan, this was at Christmas time, like the way I told you, you know, people all go up there for a Christmas holiday. And they were here at that time, and they always go up for every Christmas holiday too, you know, him and his wife. You know, I start out here at 8 o'clock in the morning, one morning, just before Christmas. I think it was on the 23rd. Either 23rd or 22nd, I started walking. I was just about to cross the river, then the first bell rang for the school. You know, it was on 23rd. And then I started keeping my time. I was running along all the way up to 12 mile. I never stopped running. Pretty soon I caught up a dog team. Then I passed it. And then I didn't know who it was, you know. I didn't even look who it was. Then I catch up another dog team. That's 12 miles up here. Then I pass it. I ran all the way then up there at 18 miles. There was lots of dog teams there. I caught them up, and I didn't take no lunch. You know, I was depending on these guys to give me even a mouthful or tea, you know, for to make the rest of the way up. So anyway, Edgar Cayley is my cousin. He's my second cousin, you know. He offered me a tea and some sandwich. And then after I eat my sandwich and tea and I just left. It must have been about 30 or 35 below. And all I had was just a woolen shirt on, you know, and gloves. But I couldn't bend around anymore because I was sweating so much, you know. And I didn't want to thaw out, so I ate my sandwich and then I just left. And all I was carrying was just my snowshoes. And then after we left that 18 mile, you know, the trail goes across and then over on the other side. And well, I had a chance to be ahead of them. So I went on the hillside all the way behind the island. And then I